This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Shaoik. Over the past few weeks, we've covered various aspects of heart health, from screening to heart rhythm disorders and how to treat complex coronary artery disease. So quite a well-rounded look at cardiovascular health. And so to round off our month-long World Heart Day special coverage, we have consultant cardiologist Dr. Chu Kim Hui from Cardiac Vascular Central Kuala Lumpur, or CVSKL, for a heart clinic segment. So Dr. Chu will be answering any questions you have related to your heart health. So this is your chance to call us with your questions. Our lines are open, 03-7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp us, 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. So one more time, the number is 03-7733-2900, or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. As I said, this is a heart clinic show. So Dr. Chu is here to answer questions about heart health. Good afternoon, Dr. Chu. How are you today?
Good afternoon, Shaikh. Good to be back. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Chu, unfortunately, to start on a little bit of a downer, I suppose, many of us read in the news last week, the Department of Statistics Malaysia released its numbers for causes of death in Malaysia for 2018. No big surprise, I suppose, that ischemic disease still came in as the number one cause of death among Malaysians. What surprised me actually is that it's been the number one cause of death for 14 years running, and cerebrovascular diseases came in at number three. So we have, when we say ischemic heart disease, I presume it means heart attack as the cause of death?
I guess ischemic heart disease is a big it encompasses a number of conditions. Of course, it includes heart attack, but also conditions related to ischemic heart disease like heart failure and some arrhythmic problems as well.
Okay. And cerebrovascular disease primarily would be stroke. Is that right?
That's right. Okay. And mind you, actually, we are basically talking very much about the same conditions because we are dealing with the same disease processes.
Okay.
Which is why a person with risk for ischemic heart disease is more likely to get stroke and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. And the disease process would be atherosclerosis.
Yes. This, in a large majority, it is atherosclerosis.
Okay. So I was stuck at that number for 14 years. We've been talking about this statistic, number one cause of death, number one cause of death. And, you know, you take into considering that consideration that Ministry of Health began its campaign, Cara Hidup Sehat, to talk about healthy lifestyles back in 1991, 28 years ago. We another good 14 years before that. Why are we not seeing the impact of all this education and awareness on healthy lifestyles?
Yeah, you're absolutely right in the sense that we should be seeing some great improvement if our actions have been taking positive impact. Year after year, we've been telling everyone that you're going to die from heart disease and it's not coming down. And if you look at it properly, you have to then understand what is the underlying reason why people get atherosclerosis, which is the basic pathology of why they get ischemic heart disease, and the risk factors that cause patients or persons to get atherosclerosis are actually increasing over the years. So if you go back to the issues of obesity, diabetes, blood pressure, cigarette smoking, lack of physical activity, all these risk factors doesn't seem to be improving. So if you don't tackle the primary sort of cause or the causation risk factors, you're not going to have a reduction in the events of ischemic heart disease. We are not alone. Mm-hmm. It is the scourge of the whole modern world. And we think that it's largely because of our lifestyle and the changing environment that we are in. So I think there's a lot more to be done despite all the primary preventive efforts. If it's not taken up by the population, then it's not going to change very much.
And on your end, you're dealing with, as you say, it's almost the end result of these lifestyle risk factors not being addressed for a long time. What do you think needs to be done, in in the broader environment in that sense. You know, you can't, as a cardiologist, be telling people to reduce their weight, to quit smoking, at which point when they come to see you, it's kind of too late, isn't it?
Yeah, you're right. I think that's a great question or comment, because we as cardiologists are dealing with manifest disease. These are patients who are at the end of the spectrum, who's had the disease process going on for decades. So we want to deal with patients before they even get the disease, or if they have heart risk factors, to be well managed. This is where the idea of primary prevention comes in. Now, I must say that in our country, the treatment has been very much focused on secondary or treatment of manifest disease. Mm-hmm. We know that there's importance in primary prevention. Efforts are being made, but I think we need to do more. We need to have more specialists who are involved in public health policymakers. So the powers that be, our political leaders, are extremely important in this. We need their sort of effort and their sort of commitment to help us to drive some of the policies that will improve primary prevention. This has been shown in many countries that if you are committed to primary prevention, you can actually reduce the incidence and prevalence of these diseases.
Mm. And one of the interesting sort of sub-statistics that the Department of Statistics mentioned is that ischemic heart disease was higher in urban areas, in fact, double in urban areas compared to rural areas, and they recorded highest levels in Petaling, Selangor. Can you explain this dichotomy, the urban and rural?
Mm. Part of it you can actually go back to the causation as well in terms of the risk factors. In urban environments, you are more exposed to, for example, unhealthy diets, a lot of fast food being fried and oily stuff and so on. You tend to be less physically active because you're going to sit in your car going through the traffic jams. If you live in the kampongs, you'll be cycling to your workplace and so on. Your work occupational duties in the rural areas are more likely to involve more physical activities as compared to office workers in the urban areas. So there are a lot of lifestyle issues in the urban areas that predispose us to more sort of increased disease prevalence.
Okay. So you mentioned smoking as one of the primary risk factors, and I think many people already know well by now the link between smoking and lung cancer, although that doesn't seem to have reduced the rates of smoking. But here's a question that we have related to smoking and heart disease.
So my question is, we hear a lot about smoking that causes lung cancer, but how does it affect the heart?
Okay, good question. Well, the cigarette smoke contains not just tar or nicotine. There are a lot of other toxic chemicals inside the cigarette smoke. The end complication of cigarette smoke is not just lung cancer, as you say, atherosclerosis, because all these toxic chemicals would actually cause some injury and inflammation in the vessel wall. And it is the inflammatory process that leads to the accumulation of the lipid or the cholesterol in the vessel wall. Mm-hmm. There will be also things like, do you know that when you smoke, let's say, a stick of cigarette, your pressure actually goes up for the next half an hour? So imagine someone who smokes a pack of cigarette or two packs of cigarette, 20, 40 sticks a day. Every half an hour after every stick, the blood pressure goes up. So there are a lot of things that are bad with the cholesterol, with the cigarettes. I have nowadays so many, unfortunately, young men in the prime of their life, 20, 30-year-olds, coming with heart disease and heart attack. And their only risk factor is cigarette alone. Mm. So that's good enough to cause heart disease. And we tell patients again and again, if you're a smoker, you have heart disease, you have to stop smoking. If you don't stop smoking, the disease will come back. Whatever we do for you, whether it's bypass surgery, angioplasty, it's going to come back. It's going to re-narrow again.
All right. And that's an interesting thing about the blood pressure going up for half an hour after you've smoked. How prolonged is that effect?
Well, it's transient because of some of the chemicals that cause the vessels to constrict.
Right.
And that's why your pressure goes up. It's a transient thing. It's not considered a cause of high blood pressure, but it does have its effect on your vessel.
And so then compounded with the other effects, it would it would manifest.
In the long run, yes. That's right.
So then, speaking of smoking, you know, what are your thoughts on vaping? Is it an effective means for smoking cessation?
Okay. This is a topic that we've been talking for quite a few years. When vaping or e-cigarettes came about, people were really happy because for once they have an alternative to cigarette, which was deemed to be really harmful. We didn't know that much about vaping and e-cigarettes for a while. In fact, some of the national bodies encourage e-cigarettes as an alternative to cigarettes. But in subsequent years, we've been seeing a lot more sort of data to suggest that e-cigarettes or vaping may not be as safe as it was thought to be. The most recent will be the issues of lung injury with e-cigarettes and vaping in the States especially. Mm-hmm. We do not fully understand the constituents or the chemicals inside the vaping material. Indeed, your number of cigarettes that you smoke will reduce when you start to vape. But whether or not e-cigarette or vaping is a good alternative, this is left to be said. For now, I think the general recommendation is if you're going to stop cigarette, maybe e-cigarettes should not be really encouraged as the main alternative. Better to stop completely rather than substitute with an e-cigarette.
Mm. But then do we know enough about the impact of e-cigarettes on the heart in first-time smokers? And we do hear a lot about young people, non-tobacco smokers, but using e-cigarettes for the first time.
I think the follow-up with e-cigarettes or experience hasn't been long enough to see its definite effect on atherosclerosis and heart disease. But there is an impression that it also may be harmful. But I think we'll have to wait for a few years to come. But with the other side effects or complications that we've seen, we are actually discouraging that as an alternative.
I mean, considering, like you said, we don't know enough. And so to recommend it as, you know, whether it's for cessation or as a safer alternative, would be unwise, don't you? Do you think that health authorities should come down harder and on regulating this?
The problem with the regulators is you need a bit more stronger, definite data before you can put in, let's say, a strict ban on a certain... Which we don't have. You can make a lot of arguments. Some people argue the fact that I'm cutting down a number of cigarettes, that's helping me. Mm. What happens with the e-cigarette? Well, we'll leave it and we'll see in the future. So it's left to be seen. But if you can, I guess it's not the best alternative. But whether it's second best, well, it's everyone's guess.
Okay. So the jury's still out on that, unfortunately, with regard to vaping. We have Dr. Chu Gim Hui, consultant cardiologist from Cardiac Vascular Central, KL or CVSKL, in the studio for a heart clinic segment. That means you can call or send in your questions related to heart health. Our lines are open 03-7733-2900. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be right back after this with a question about cardiac arrest, sudden cardiac arrest among supposedly young and fit people. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shao-Ik. In the studio with me today, consultant cardiologist Dr. Chu Gim Hui from Cardiac Vascular Central Kuala Lumpur, or CVSKL. It's our special heart clinic segment where you can call in or send in your questions related to heart issues. Our lines are open, 03-7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have a question. We have Elvira on the line. Good afternoon, Elvira.
Yes, good afternoon.
Yes, you have a question?
Yes, I do. I'll put you on. My husband has a question, actually. He's here. Just a moment.
Hi, good afternoon, sir.
Hi, how are you? I'm Chris. And actually, I'm a heart patient, and I have had a bypass and heart failure, but I've been okay for the last couple of years. And today I had a bit of numbness as I was having a meeting, and I got up from the chair, and I had a bit of a numbness on my left leg, and it lasted for a few minutes, and then I was okay. But I'm just wondering, any signs of what is that indication of?
Okay, hi Chris, Dr. Chu here. Well, the numbness was on the leg, and it happened after you got up from doing a meeting. I think that the symptom is a bit too remote from the heart to be attributed to the heart condition, although you had a bypass surgery. Or it could be anything. I mean, it could be just because you've sat for a while, you may have pressed on some nerves, so you had some numbness, and once you relieve that, sort of takes a while for it to get better. So probably not the heart, Chris. Not to worry.
Oh, okay.
Thank you very much, Chris and Elvira. And we also have another question, as I earlier mentioned, related to heart issues among young and fit people.
I'm quite active in sports, football, futsal, marathon. And lately we have seen like people at even at young age, right? They get cardiac arrest while playing sports. And the worst thing about it is that we can never know when the attack is going to come, right? So what can we do to, you know, to keep alert of that, when we need to stop playing or slow down, things like that, so that we can prevent getting cardiac arrest attack?
Right, thank you so much. I think that's being a sort of hot topic. Everyone's talking about it, especially if you are kind of the active person who's in the sports circle. Mm-hmm. You were here amongst your friends or mm-hmm. someone you've known at the badminton court or the marathon who just sort of drops dead suddenly. Mm-hmm. Of course, it is a concern. Now, if you look at the causes of sudden death in the young or during sporting activities, the young people may have a few conditions that may predispose them to die suddenly during physical activity. Some of these may be genetically sort of related. They have family history of someone who has died suddenly, especially when they are young. So they may have potential, for example, some abnormal heart rhythm that can be triggered sometimes with activity or sometimes by itself spontaneously that can cause the heart to go into cardiac arrest. There are also some conditions related to the heart structure that there are some what we call cardiomyopathies, meaning these are diseases of the heart muscle. One specifically whereby the heart muscles can get thickened. This can also be genetically inherited, and they are prone to get some abnormal heart rhythm. So sometimes you hear about competitive athletes who die suddenly on the field. They may have some of these undiagnosed conditions that can cause sudden death. Some may also be born with some abnormal sort of vessels that can be compressed during strenuous physical activity. So honestly, there is really no way of knowing beforehand whether you have that condition. And so most of the time, many of these cases, unfortunately, were only found when they had the first event, and some of them are fatal at the first time. There are warning symptoms, however, if you're a fit person. If you have exertional-related symptoms of near-fainting or true fainting episodes, or you have some palpitations, that means some possible irregular heart rhythms, or you had chest pains when you exert yourself, do have it checked out. Or you find that if you've been doing regular activities without any problem, but suddenly you find that your effort tolerance starts to decline, you get tired more easily, then you should get it checked out as well. The age plays a matter in terms of the underlying condition that can cause sudden death. The older ones are more likely to have ischemic heart disease, which we talk about the main cause of death, meaning they may have undiagnosed blockages in the heart, and so a heart attack may be triggered during the activity, and so they have a heart attack and they may die suddenly. So it depends on the age, and it depends on whether you have a family profile that predicts a sudden death.
Do you think those kinds of signs like palpitations or chest pains tend to be missed among the very athletic because of their level of activity, they feel that they need to suppress it?
It's very individual, I think. Very often, the heart rhythm issue, especially the fast heart rhythms, they are felt. The patients may actually feel some palpitations. But very often, young people fit well, they tend to dismiss it as something which is just normal. Mm. Or they say maybe it's just after coffee and so on. So, if you have anything out of the usual, have it checked out, and just to be safe.
Okay. Dr. Chu Gim Hui from CVS KL for our heart clinic segment in the studio. So call us 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. A question from Jolene on WhatsApp. Can you rank the smoking alternatives? And here I will take it to mean perhaps a nicotine replacement or smoking cessation aids. Can you rank them from the best to the worst to assist smokers who are trying to quit?
Okay. Well, cigarette cessation is really one of the key things that we like to advocate to patients who smoke, especially when they have established heart disease, but it's not easy. Cigarette smoking is like drug addiction. Mm-hmm. We do know that there are chemical changes in the brain in smokers. That's why when they like to smoke more when they are stressed, because there are some chemical mediators that are released in the brain that helps them to relieve the stress. Mm-hmm. So in terms of smoking cessation therapies, there are a number. We can't really say that there's one that sort of supersedes the or is better than the others. But to me, really, most important thing for a smoker to want to stop smoking is to have the motivation to stop smoking. If that person doesn't want to stop smoking, whatever you try for the person, he's not going to stop. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we advise the patients, what is your best motivation to stop? Is it your own health? Is it your wife? Is it your family? Look at them. They are probably the best motivator for the smokers to stop. And usually for us, the physicians, our best time to catch them is right after they have a cardiac event or procedure.
All right. I was going to say, if they hear, but this is for the younger ones, I suppose, if they find out that they're going to have a baby.
Oh, yeah, it's true. It's true. So they're going to be a new daddy and so they want to stop. Yes, I agree. So those are the best times to catch them. So in terms of what we can offer, there are a number of sort of nicotine replacement therapies available. They can be in the form of patches. It can be form of some other gums and so on. These are helpful. But as I said, motivation must come first. They want to do, and that can help to relieve some of the craving. There are a few other medications available that works on the brain level to reduce the craving and reduce the withdrawal symptoms when they stop cigarettes. So that may be helpful as well. Having peer support from friends who have stopped smoking or from family members is also extremely useful. Having support groups, that can be helpful as well. So we got to get everything together to try to help the patients best. Getting them distracted, that means doing some other physical activity instead of cigarette smoking, that helps. If you go back to your kaki that smokes every time you go to your teh tarik again, then that's bad as well. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Get new friends. So the nicotine replacement therapies are only one part of it. Motivation and support is another big part of it. KS is asking, he or she has a first degree relative who died of sudden heart attack. Could you recommend other screening modalities apart from annual checkups? And KS is 33 years old, very young.
Hi, KS. If your relative died at a young age, so the first degree relative would have a higher risk as well. So they need to be screened why they get that sudden death, if we know what it is. If the death is here, you said it's sudden MI, means sudden heart attack. So we want to screen whether amongst the family members, do they have the same risk factors, especially genetic forms of high cholesterol. There are some people who are born with very high cholesterol since childhood, and these people get heart disease in a very young age. Some can be as early as teens or 20s. So you have that needs to be dealt with. This genetic form of high cholesterol, in the most extreme forms, in some of the countries in Europe where they have very good lipid clinics, they start treatment to lower cholesterol at the age of 7-8 years old.
Oh, wow.
And they have seen that over the years, we can actually delay or prevent them from getting heart disease. So the earlier done, the better. Apart from that, of course, if you find yourself having a few other risks for heart disease, like you are a smoker, your cholesterol may be high, get yourself, as you said, screening test as a basic test to see whether there's something else that you can do. You may not be able to pick up heart disease, but at least you pick up the risk factors that you need to deal with in terms of lifestyle, plus or minus medications, if really necessary.
So any specific screening tests, like ECGs, stress tests, those kinds of things?
Well, ECGs are very basic. In fact, it's not a very good test to pick up atherosclerosis or ischemic heart disease. We have been using treadmill tests as kind of common test done in many centers. I think it's been the kind of trend in many parts of the world as well. Although, to be honest, the stress test is not the most accurate test. There are limitations to the test. The ability of the test to pick up actual disease depends on the probability, baseline probability of that person having a disease to begin with. Mm-hmm. So there are limitations. So when you go for this screening test, it is good if you have no major issues before. It's just as a routine screening test. But do not take it as if you have a normal stress test that you have the green bill of health. Mm-hmm. Because stress test, for example, only picks up when you have severe disease. Mm-hmm. It can't tell you whether you have minor disease. So you still need to look at the whole picture. If you have a stress test that's normal, you have suspicious symptoms, perhaps you need to go for more detailed assessment.
Okay. And, your colleague, Dr. Suren from CVS, was in a few weeks ago, and we had a whole discussion about screening for heart disease. So any of you who would like to listen to that, you can download the podcast. Just search for CVS KL. Another question on WhatsApp. I must say that this is from some questions that we collected when we did the previous heart clinic show with CVS. And we didn't have time to get to this. So I'd like to flag some of them because they're relevant to the conversation now. CT from KL at that time, 36 years old, 63 kg and 168 cm. He or she leads a healthy lifestyle, goes for 1 hour CrossFit classes 3 to 4 times a week, avoids eating fatty foods. But cholesterol, total cholesterol is 6.5, LDL is 4.4 and HDL is 2.1. So CT is concerned, should he or she start looking into medications like statins?
Great. CT, you're a good example to a lot of people. I always tell everyone, you must exercise. Exercise is one of the best things you can do for yourself. So you've done that very well. You're taking care of your diet. But I guess from the WhatsApp, you're still a bit disappointed that your cholesterol is high. Why is that so? Our cholesterol, you must realize that up to 80% of the cholesterol is actually determined by your genes. Your genes tell your body how much cholesterol to produce. Only 15 to 20% of the cholesterol can be accounted for from what you take in from your diet. Mm-hmm. So if your baseline cholesterol is high, regardless of how strict you are with your diet, it will come down a little bit, but not very much. So assuming that you have been very strict with your diet and you get that LDL, total cholesterol 6.6, your LDL is 4.4, mm-hmm. your baseline without being careful might be more than 7, your total cholesterol, your LDL may be about 5. And that suggests to me that you may have some form of the inherited forms of high cholesterol. Mm-hmm. So if you have a family history of high cholesterol heart disease, I think you may want to have a bit more detailed assessment to see whether there may be documented early plaque or atherosclerosis, because those are the things that help the physician or doctor to decide whether we should put you on a statin. We don't put anyone on a statin just because the cholesterol is high, unless it's extremely high. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, we've discussed earlier that there are some issues, side effects with it. But if you think that you're going to gain much more benefit from taking a statin against the possible side effects, then we should, because it's a good preventive effort. In fact, of all the therapies that we have, statins perhaps is the best lifesaver that we had. It reduces the risk of heart disease and stroke by about 20-30%. We have seen how it can stop the progression of the plaques. So if you need it, you need it. But just because your cholesterol is high, it's not the only reason why we'll put you on a statin.
Okay, it needs to come hand in hand with the individual assessment
as well, right?
Yeah. We have some questions related to side effects of statins, as you've mentioned, Dr. Chu, which we will get to after the next quick break. We have Dr. Chu Kim Hui, consultant cardiologist from Cardiac Vascular Central Kuala Lumpur, in the studio for our heart clinic show. You can call us 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have a few more questions on WhatsApp that we will get to after the market update. BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. In the studio with me, Dr. Chu Gim Hui, consultant cardiologist from Cardiac Vascular Central, Kuala Lumpur, for our Heart Clinic special. You can call us 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio with your questions. Dr. Chu, just before the break, you were talking about the treatment with statins. If your assessment of a patient should indicate it for prevention of further heart disease. And related to that, we have a few questions on WhatsApp related to the side effects of statins. And one who says that her mother had tried many different statins but developed severe muscle aches after taking it. So are there any other medications that would be helpful?
All right. Statins, as we mentioned, is really the mainstay of the method of how we lower cholesterol. And we know that it's important for people with heart disease. But unfortunately, yes, there are some people who are intolerant to statin. One of the most common, if not the most common side effect with statin is actually muscle-related symptom. They may get some aching pains in the muscles or soreness. Usually these are seen in the bigger muscle groups like the buttocks, the calves, or the back, or the shoulders. By and large, most of the symptoms should appear very early on within the first few weeks of taking the medication. They may be aggravated after some physical activity. We do see that maybe in about 5 to 10% of the population. Most of the time, these are mild, they are bearable. There will be occasions, there are some people who have extreme reactions where they get some inflammation of the muscles, but those are uncommon. Yes, if you are genetically determined that you have developed these kind of reactions to the statins, like your mum, the doctors have tried a number of different molecules in the statin group, and if she can't tolerate, unfortunately, then she can't take it. And there are other alternatives which may be somewhat less effective, the oral forms. There are some what we call cholesterol binders. These are medicines that instead of what statins do, prevent your liver from producing the cholesterol. These other agents block the absorption of cholesterol in your gut. So they're not as effective, but they can be a useful adjunct. Sometimes patients, they cannot tolerate the statins on a higher dose. So sometimes what we do is we use a lower dose statin or use it on an intermittent or every other day kind of basis. Mm-hmm. And we combine that with the cholesterol binder inhibitors. They actually work very well. There are also today, I think just for mention, we have some great advances in methods of lowering cholesterol. There are some new treatment, including some injectables, like what you do for injections, mm-hmm. like the insulins, that can actually remarkably lower your cholesterol LDL by 50 to 60%. So these are some of the options that we are giving to our patients who definitely need statins, but unfortunately they have some side effects to the statins.
Okay, all right. And another question on WhatsApp. I'm going to go through them quickly because we have quite a number coming in now. What would be the right procedure to find out if one is cleared from any heart disease or potential heart attack? So this person has done some form of CT scan and stress ECG, which shows no symptoms, but he or she feels chest pains occasionally, and his mother has had a bypass before. Should she or he be worried?
Right. So he or she has done a stress test, and we've mentioned earlier, stress test is a good screening test, but it's not the best test. We do miss out quite a lot of patients. In fact, in the most latest iteration of the European guideline for the assessment of people with heart disease, stress test has really come very low down in the sort of hierarchy of tests because of the lack of accuracy of the test. And you talk about CT scan, this is where we come in. We need to, again, understand what kind of CT scan you're talking about. The CT scan that is used to look at the coronary artery is called a coronary CT angiography. It is actually the most accurate, non-invasive test we have today to pick up blockages in the heart artery without putting a catheter into the heart. So that's actually a very accurate test. It is still not a mainstream test for everybody that comes in with a chest pain. But if you think that the probability of disease is high, it's actually getting more prominence because more and more data suggests that they're very accurate. We can pick up disease, even mild disease. And the best of all, data shows that if you pick up early disease, that actually is a good motivator for the person to take positive lifestyle changes or even take medication to prevent disease in the future.
Okay. And, you know, Wong had a similar question related to the test to detect heart disease. But also, he wants to know, you know, if, and he's only in his late 20s, he's recently experienced sudden sharp pains in the heart. And would that be a sign of a heart attack?
So pain, any pain in the chest, of course, we are most worried when it's actually arising from the heart. But there's so many other causes of pain in the chest. Now, the typical description of a ischemic heart disease-related chest pain will be like a pressing, heavy, compressing kind of pain. Location of pain may not be so important, but most of the time it is central or somewhat to the left. But really, location is really individual. Some patients have it on the right side. Some patients don't have it at all in the chest. Some have it, some discomfort over the jaw, or the neck, or the arm. Mm-hmm. So location not so important. But if you have a chest discomfort that comes on with physical activity, emotional upset and anger and unrest, it goes away. That's kind of typical of a heart problem, and we might want to have it checked out.
Okay, and sort of related to that as well, we're just going to continue on these, you know, potential signs of a heart problem. John is 68, and when he does brisk walking around his park, 2.9 kilometers per round with two rounds. Well done, John. He occasionally experiences slight chest tightness during the first kilometer, and after about 10 minutes, it disappears.
Yeah, I think then we start to wonder whether it's actually the heart disease, because as I described earlier, pain that comes on with exertion and then you rest, it goes away. That may be a heart. But here in your case, the pain comes on, but you persist with the activity, it seems to go away. It does not completely rule out heart disease. If you truly have a narrowing of the vessel that causes the chest discomfort, sometimes body does have what we call bypass channels, or we call it collaterals, meaning that if you're getting chest pain because there's a narrowing of the artery, the part of the heart muscle is not getting enough oxygen. As you exercise more, some of the other vessels open up to try to supply to that area, and that may sort of ameliorate some of the pain. So this is one of the possible explanations that you can have the pain that goes away with exertion. But again, I guess if you have some risk factors, please see a doctor and have it checked out.
Okay. Another question. I used to get statins from the private hospital. Now that I'm retired, I'm getting my medications from the government hospital, and he's getting generics. And he wants to know, are they as effective?
Yeah, that's a very practical question, and my patients always have that issues as well. Statins nowadays, we have, because of the availability of generics, so it does help in those who are a bit financially challenged. Of course, you're worried whether it's as good. Basically, this molecule or the active ingredient is the same. Some of the other constituents may be a bit different. By and large, of course, if cost is not an issue, I tell my patients, go with the originals. But if cost is an issue, go with the generic. It should be okay. What is different? Maybe, not all, some of the generic producers may be less stringent in the quality control. So sometimes, occasionally, we may get patients who are on the same dose of medications over years, but you see that the, for example, the cholesterol level sort of fluctuates because batch to batch, the potency of the drug may be different, right? But it's better than taking the generic than not taking it at all. So if you have a problem with the cost, I think the generics are fine. Go ahead.
Okay. Dr. Asad wants to know, is our war on lipids through statins based on, an erroneous assumption? He says more than 90% of cholesterol that gets measured is from the liver and less than 10% is from the diet, or rather 80 and 20%, as you mentioned earlier, Dr. Chu. I mean, I think what Dr. Asad is asking is, are we too overly focused on using statins?
The main focus should be actually is in trying to lower your LDL particle level. If Dr. Asad is a medical doctor, we know that that's the primary culprit that causes atherosclerosis. In terms of the manner in which how we lower cholesterol, statins have proven to be the most effective that we have in terms of the oral medication. So I think the target should be to lower LDL with whatever means that you have. And the strongest weapon that we have today still is actually the statin. That's why it's been a focus. The question sometimes that people ask, or you see a lot in the internet as a negative publicity, about whether LDL is the culprit, mm-hmm. and therefore whether statin should be treated. In terms of mainstream Western medicine, I think it is so clear-cut. Whether from epidemiology, meaning observational data from, let's say, population with high cholesterol, they have more heart disease, low cholesterol, less heart disease, to interventional study, means you treat the high cholesterol, you know that you can prevent heart disease. And from genetic studies, it's very clear. So I think it's very clear to us that there is a direct relationship between LDL cholesterol and heart disease, and lowering the LDL by whatever means, of which statin is the most effective, is going to be useful.
Okay. And on the flip side of, conventional Western medicine, you have your supplements. And we have a question from Lawrence, who wants to know whether taking fish oil can reduce the risk of heart attack.
Mm. Okay. Fish oil has gone through the whole mm-hmm. sort of wheel cycle. And there have been so many sort of fish oil studies. In the early days, many years ago, there were some big studies from Italy and so on that tells that people after a heart attack, taking a fish oil, they may have less heart attack, less heart failure. And subsequently, most of the trials were actually negative or neutral. In the last year or year before, there was another trial that shows a positive result with the fish oil. So the story is not finished in the sense that, is it, are all fish oil the same? That's mm-hmm. one question. Is the dose important? So at this point in time, the only sort of really potent fish oil that has been shown to lower incidence of heart disease is the one that was used in that trial, which is currently, unfortunately, still not available in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. But by and large, I think fish oil is fairly safe. It, in higher doses, it does lower your triglyceride, not your LDL cholesterol, mm-hmm. right? But specifically, whether it helps to prevent heart disease, only in the formulation that has been studied in that trial.
Okay, so that's very limited then. What about aspirin then for prevention of heart attack in healthy people?
Okay, great question again. For many years, I think we've grown up seeing our family members being prescribed an aspirin just because they have, they say, high blood pressure or cholesterol or diabetes and so on. That's based on the presumption that we know that people with confirmed heart disease or previous stroke, aspirin will prevent the next event. So that's clear. If you demonstrate that this patient has got significant blockages by some means of scan and so on, yes, aspirin will be helpful. What about healthy people? That's where in about 1.5-2 years ago, a number of trials came up to show that aspirin for people without manifest disease, we call it primary prevention, did not really help to significantly prevent events because it runs at a higher risk of causing more bleeding issues. So by and large, it's not recommended as a routine prescription for preventing heart disease.
Okay. And we have also more on medications. Lynn, who wants to know about anticoagulants, she says her aunt has been diagnosed with atrial fibrillation. The doctor prescribed a blood thinner and she has recently had to go for emergency surgery. However, the doctor says that the drug she's on has no antidote. Why can't the doctor prescribe a blood thinner with an antidote?
Okay, so you're describing a condition called atrial fibrillation, which is actually an abnormal heart rhythm. And this abnormal heart rhythm basically causes the blood flow in the upper chambers of the heart to be sort of rather sluggish and clots tend to form. If the patient has atrial fibrillation and other risk factors, that person's risk of getting a stroke will be very high. When that is seen, your doctor will prescribe a blood thinner, which is not the aspirin or Plavix or those antiplatelet that we talk about. These are even stronger blood thinners to try to reduce the chance of clots forming in the heart and hence prevent stroke. The problem with this, there has been so generally two forms. One, the older ones are the warfarin, but we hardly use them nowadays. We use the newer ones. The newer agents are good because they are predictable, they are effective, and you don't have to monitor them. There are three, there'll be another one coming up soon, four available in our country today, the newer agents. Only one of them at the moment has an antidote. The rest do not have an antidote. Well, the antidotes take some time in terms of development. They had to go to clinical trial. The other ones, they are coming soon. But by and large, number one, we need to know that this patient's prevention of stroke is very important. So they need to be on this medication. these medications are predictable, and many a time, if they need to go undergo surgery, what we need to do is, unless it's an emergency bleeding condition, we just have to stop the medication upon, let's say, a day or two, and the medication will wear off and the patient can go for surgery.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of emergency bleeding, yes, there will be an issue if they have no antidote, but by and large, this is actually less uncommon.
Okay. And coming back to alternative supplements and things like that, I have to address this one.
Okay.
Garlic, ginger, honey this combination.
I like this so much. You know, every clinic
sounds
sessions,
like something for a sore throat.
you get this almost every clinic session. It was one or two patients who come back. This is the most famous concoction to dissolve the cholesterol and open up your vessel.
Mm.
Garlic, ginger, honey, sort of concoction. You can find a formula in the YouTube as well. Does it work?
Mm.
Well, I wish it worked.
If it worked, you'd be out of a job.
I like to give to all my patients. They don't have to come for treatment anymore. That's not mainstream. I would tell my patients, if you like to try, go ahead. I've not seen one single case that it works. But if you're a diabetic, the honey may be too sweet for you.
Mm, okay, so to be mindful of that. Just very quickly, I think, a question from Paul. How early in life should people begin screening for heart disease and, you know, to know your family history and to do those tests that you were talking about earlier, you know?
Right. I guess if you have a strong family history of premature heart disease, you should start looking at screening much earlier, right? So if someone in a family had, let's say someone, a female who had heart disease before the age of 45, male before the age of 55, you want to screen a bit earlier. Or if you have risk factors, you are a smoker, your high blood pressure, your cholesterol has been high, you want to screen it from about age of 40 onwards. You want to do every few years, do a few sort of basic screening tests.
Okay, all right. Do you have a final message for us, Dr. Chu, as we wrap up, you know, this month-long coverage on heart topics?
Thanks so much, Eric. I think we all talk about heart disease, one of the favorite topics, because we have so many people afflicted with heart disease in our country, someone we know, someone a relative. But we want everyone to really take care of your heart health. You have to start with yourself. You have to start about lifestyle changes, which is the key. Make sure you choose the right kind of food, good diet, exercise, extremely important. Make sure you're not overweight. If you are a smoker, please, by all means, stop cigarettes. If you have some symptoms, have it checked out. If you are heart disease patients, make sure you take your medications, follow the doctor's advice, and follow up with the doctor. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much. That was Dr. Chu Kim Hui, consultant cardiologist from Cardiac Vascular Central, Kuala Lumpur, for our Heart Clinic segment. You've been listening to Health and Living on A Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.